Greetings, horror fans, and welcome to episode 188 of Frightmares. I'm your host, Austin Proctor. And joining me across the table is my wife, who is struggling beyond all belief.
Yeah.
Gabrielle Proctor. Alexa, turn off studio lights. Thank you. Oh, Alexa, turn on the neon. Can't forget that. Today we're talking about bodies, 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 three times.
Body, yaddy, 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 yaddy.
Is it this one? There it is. an A24 joint. This is continuing Women's History Month, honoring Women's History Month, where we are talking about female-directed horror movies. And not only was this directed by a lady, but it was also written. There's a lot of ladies involved in the production of this movie, and it's very awesome. And most of the cast are ladies.
Though this in no way should be a film to represent strong female relationships.
What do you mean?
Why'd you mute me?
I meant to hit that button. What do you mean? Elaborate.
Every relationship in this movie was terrible. They're all terrible people. And frankly, if I had friends like this, I would be miserable. But it is like, you know, directed by a female. There are these types of friends groups that exist. So I don't think it's like bad in that sense. I just think it's like, oof, that's what you wanted out of friendship. But we'll get more into that later.
Yeah, everyone in this movie is a pretty big shitbag.
Yeah, except for like Lee Pace's character. He's more like in it and trying to catch up with what the hell everyone else is doing.
Yeah, he's the only one that was probably a nice person and got caught up in the wrong.
Oh, and B. Yeah, basically yeah. People who were brought in who had no idea what the hell they were in for.
Who were not part of the original toxic friend group.
Yeah, but we'll get more into that later.
Yeah, as you know, what?
Oh, I'm like, these were confusing me.
These words?
Yeah.
The words on screen. No, but as you know, before we get into the movie, we're going to get into some horror gossip, horror news, whatever you want to call it. But before we do that, even it's David Cronenberg's birthday. So happy birthday to him. I believe he's 80 this year.
Wow.
I know. So I'll probably watch a Cronenberg joint tonight after you go to bed. Maybe a little Videodrome action because I know that one.
I watched it before you did.
Yeah, you watched a whole bunch of movies.
It was a day I had to do a big drawing project for college, and I did Die Hard.
Die Hard 2.
Lethal Weapon.
Oh,
Die Hard 2. Lethal Weapon 2. Videodrome.
Videodrome.
And then there's like, in my time op, you can see where I'm like, and if I have time, I'm going to watch Videodrome. And then after that, I went, that is the weirdest movie I've ever seen.
Can confirm we've done it on this podcast somewhere in the 70s or 80s range of episodes.
We did, because I told you I had seen it before.
Yeah.
And forgot most
one.
Of it.
So happy birthday to David Cronenberg on March 15th, 2023. So some things in horror. We are getting a Haunt sequel, if you're a fan of that movie, which came out. I think that came out the year we got married, because I'm pretty sure that we watched it on...
Is Haunt the one with the haunt that's...
Gee, I don't know.
Shut up. That's the one with the haunt that they're like, yeah, this place is really cool. And they're like, give us all your cell phones.
Yeah, it's a haunt in the middle of nowhere, and
it's all sketchy.
It's sketchy, but it's kind of, you know, it's like interactive that you're part of the haunt. I think they can like touch you and grab you, but yeah, everyone has to hand over your cell phones, and you're just like, no, that's not, homie doesn't play that game. That is a huge red flag. But the finer details remain a mystery, but filmmaker Scott Beck and Brian Woods of A Quiet Place have revealed that a sequel to the 2019 haunt. Our 2019's Haunt is officially in the works. There's no word on whether they will return to direct the follow-up, but the important thing is that it does appear to be happening. I don't really... watched it one time. I can't even remember really what happens besides everyone mostly gets gooshed, so I don't really know how you'd make a sequel, because if everyone died, I can't remember. I know maybe one person got away. Maybe it's their story, or maybe it's just the same haunt and it's a whole new gaggle of people. I don't know.
I remember the bit where they took the cell phones.
Wow. I remember there was a bit where one of their friends got killed in one of the scenes in the rooms, and he's like, that looks really real. Wow,
yeah,
good job,
that.
Guys. I was like, no, that's actually happening there, buddy.
Yeah, I remember that, and then everything else is
question mark.
Stuff definitely happened. I've got things, images. Yeah. I got no scenes in my head.
I can see the outside of the haunt is a big building with a rolly up door, and it was in the middle of nowhere.
A warehouse.
That's the word. Mm-hmm. So yeah, if you're a haunt fan, be on the lookout for the sequel, coming TBD. Is she kicking around in there?
No, she's settling in uncomfortable positions. Heads up, the real horror of pregnancy is never knowing when your baby is going to kick you in the crotch.
And every time I try to feel these little kicks, she just completely stops. So obviously she's got some resentment for me already.
I don't remember who it was, but someone's like, maybe you just have a soothing effect on her that she settles when you start talking.
I'd prefer that. I'd prefer that. That's much better.
Don't worry. She'll like you a lot more when she comes out and she can see what's going on.
Next up, we have some plot details for Return to Silent Hill. That's right. You heard me. They're making a sequel directed by Christopher Gans, who also did Brotherhood of the Wolf, Silent Hill 2006, and that mildly okay Beauty and the Beast live action movie.
Yeah, there were parts of it I liked and there were parts of it I didn't like, but I sure saw it in theaters.
We were on a vacation when we just like happened to, it was like 20 minutes in and you're like, oh, let's watch this. I'm like, okay. And at the end of it, I'm like, hey, I mean, it was like, well, it was good, I guess. It was all right.
My favorite part is honestly the sequence where Beast gets turned into the Beast, this like really aggressive dance number. Like it's like a masquerade ball and everyone's got this really harsh makeup on. But yeah, there was a lot they held back on. I will say Luke Evans as Gaston was super fun, though.
Luke Evans.
He was in Hobbit. He was the barge guy.
Sure.
Also gay.
Oh, okay. Nice. Good.
Sorry, we just had a discussion we were watching, since we were watching Bodies, Bodies, Bodies. I didn't realize Lee Pace was gay. I'm like, I'm missing things.
Yeah, and I didn't even realize that that was Ronan from Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yeah, he's like one of the few.
Kind of hard to recognize without all that makeup on.
He's one of the few guys who is like these random white guys that you would see in roles, and they're like kind of smaller roles, but everyone was like, oh, he's adorable and I love him. That didn't come out later to be like a weirdo or, yeah, because you got Armie Hammer, who's like into cannibal stuff.
Yeah, eating people's flesh and shit.
Zachary Levy is like a anti-vax and really weird about that stuff. But then you still got Lee Pace, and he did Pushing Daisies, and he's precious.
What was the other thing you said he was in? He was Ronan from Guardians of the Galaxy. And
oh, he was also Legolas's very attractive father in The Hobbit.
He's a good-looking guy. I mean, I can't deny it. He's a good-looking dude.
I really have to show you Pushing Daisies, by the way, because it's like
a show.
It was only two seasons. It unfortunately got canceled, but it is so freaking whimsical. I think it's the same people who did Dead Like Me, but it's so whimsical, and it's a lot of solving murders every episode, but it's like this charming show, and Lee Pace is just like adorable in it.
Mm.
Yeah.
You used a hard F right there. Freaking. Wow.
Freaking.
Freaking Pushing Daisies. Anyways, the director of Beauty and the Beast, because that's what we were talking about, is doing Return to Silent Hill. This movie will star Jeremy Irvine from Spielberg's War Horse, and Hannah Emily Anderson, or Hen for short, from Jigsaw and X-Men Dark Phoenix. The story will follow James, a man broken after being separated from his one true love, Anderson. When a mysterious letter calls him back to Silent Hill in search of her, he finds a once recognizable town transformed by an unknown evil. As James descends deeper into the darkness, he encounters terrifying figures, both familiar and new, and begins to question his own sanity as he struggles to make sense of reality and hold on long enough to save his lost love.
God, I hope that's clearer plot line than the last one.
Well, it's weird because I enjoy...
The last one I watched, sorry.
I enjoy the 2006 Silent Hill, but it's a fucking mess.
It's like so much going on.
It's so much happening.
It's hard to keep track of what's happening. It feels like a poor video game adaptation because of like how disjointed the plot is, and then you're not really sure what's happening at this point. And then some of the effects are wonky as hell.
But then some of them are super good. It's very
weird.
But
then they have like these really long sequences to scare you, and then there won't be anything for a long period of time. You're like, I don't know what I'm supposed to be feeling right now.
It's a very jarring movie, but I would like to see. I think they did Silent Hill Revelations in 3D.
I heard that was even worse.
I'm pretty sure it is worse. So he didn't do that one, so I guess this will just be like a direct sequel. from the 2006. And God, talk about a slow play, because it's, you know, however many years, 17 years later. Mm-hmm. Like, holy shit. That's a slow play for a sequel. But I mean, I'm excited. I'll check it out. So I don't know what your thoughts are on that. Maybe it's just, as long as it's just better. Is that where you stand?
I'm
going
to have to see a trailer. Some movies I don't, but this I will. Speaking of which, I do have another movie to bring up. I don't think it's going to be horror, but okay. It might be.
Oh, wow. All right. Well, speaking of movies that are happening, this is going to excite you, I think. Del Toro is slated to
I'm in. Speaking of movies I don't need trailers for.
I'll watch anything from Del Toro.
I will.
Let's just settle that right now. But no, Del Toro is apparently going to be adapting Mary Shelley's Frankenstein, which is interesting, not only because it's Del Toro doing Frankenstein, but because you know that all that shit is going to be practical, and that's exactly what we need in our lives right now, is a practical Frankenstein film.
Look, I love everything he comes out with, especially because of the Hellboy movies. But damn, I was thinking the other day about going to see Crimson Peak just because I liked the trailer and knew it was Del Toro, and Heather and I going to see that, and how wildly unhinged that movie was. But we're like, the effects are just so amazing. Adore that movie. Like, and I've actually read Frankenstein. That's a book I bothered to read the whole damn thing.
Yeah, Mary Shelley's Frankenstein. That's like the OG Frankenstein, right?
Yeah, because this one is a whole thing. It's like a whole philosophical thing. It's not just, oh, monster. It's like, you know, about humanity and stuff. So you should probably read it beforehand. So on board, 100%.
Oh, wait, hold on. Am I mistaken here? Mary Shelley's Frankenstein from 1994?
No, you're thinking of a movie they made.
Okay. Maybe the book. Mary Shelley. Oh, book. There we go. Yeah, that one. When were you published? Holy shit. 1818? Oh, my God. Frankenstein wasn't even a movie until like 1932 or 1935. Holy shit. That was written a long time ago. That is 200 years old, 205 years old, and we're still adapting it. Isn't that wild?
Yeah.
That's fucking crazy. I didn't realize it was 1818. I thought it was 1900s.
What's wild, though,
is my God.
That story, she was like at this thing with Lord Byron, her husband, and Lord Byron's physician. The four of them decide to have like a writing contest to deal with some crappy weather, and that's what she came up with.
Oh, my God. 280 pages, January 1st, 1818. Yeah, 205 years ago. Holy wow.
Yeah, they literally, okay. It's just because she and a few guys were having a competition for a scary story, and that's what she came
and
up
she,
with.
And she made something that has stood the test of time because it's still being adapted.
Yep.
Wow. All right. So that's cool. But yeah, people that are in talks to be in the movie, or people that have shown interest, Mia Goth, Andrew Garfield, and Oscar Isaac. I fucking hope all of them join this movie. That would be a very interesting cast. I assume Oscar would probably play
the monster.
The monster, yeah. And Garfield would probably play Dr. Frankenstein.
Mia Goth would play a character who makes a very unfortunate end. Yeah.
So, yeah, that's amazing. I don't know, you know, this is all just stuff that I find on Fangoria. And, you know, if they don't have any other information, I have no other information for you. So it's coming out at some point. Obviously, it's Del Toro. We will keep you up to speed with what's going on with that. What is the movie you had something like we recently watched or something that you...
Sorry.
It's like it's dying to get out, apparently.
No, this is an in-development film with Jack Black in it.
Oh.
Movie's called Dear Santa. I just heard about it today. I just forgot to tell you about it. So far, it's only listed as a comedy, but who knows? I think it's going to have some scary elements to it because of the context of the film. The film is about a kid who writes a letter to Santa, mislabels it, mails it to Satan.
Oh, and, shit, yeah.
Like,
all right.
Yep, don't need to know anything else. I'm on board. Jack Black's doing it. We're good.
As long as David Grohl plays the devil, because he played the devil in Tenacious D, and that was fucking everything.
Jack Black is playing the devil.
I mean, I'm not mad.
I mean, who could be?
I'm not going to be upset with that. Okay.
Also, I have one more other thing, but we'll bring it up before we get to everything else. So
everything everywhere all at once?
No.
That was my segue.
Oh,
that
yeah.
That was my segue.
Crushed
into,
it.
Oh, shut up. So, yeah, speaking of everything, everywhere, all at once, I wanted to briefly touch on the Oscars because, I mean, I don't care about them. Because
the Oscars touched on you.
Ew, no. They imprinted on me. No.
What?
No, I just wanted to mention that there was some people definitely worthy of these awards. Like I said, I don't give a shit about award ceremonies. But when they, you know, when they have people that I know deserve it on the roster, I tried to pay attention. And, you know, Ki-Hoo Kwan was on there for Everything Everywhere All at Once. He won Best Supporting Actor. I know someone from Everything Everywhere All at Once. Oh, Jamie Lee won Best Supporting Actress.
Our Scream Queen, yeah. And Michelle Yeoh won for Best Actress.
And then, yeah, she won for Best Actress. And then it also won for Best Editing, Best Screenplay, and Movie of the Year.
Yeah,
right?
Best Picture.
So you got 7 awards. And then Brendan Fraser was awarded for his performance in The Whale. So
like A24 crushed it this year.
A24 fucking killed it this year. Really showing those big studios up, which is makes me very happy when an independent studio like that. I mean, they're definitely becoming more mainstream, I feel.
Yeah.
It's natural to happen. You know, they were a very small production company when they started out, but over the years, obviously, they've become more, you know, bigger. But it's just nice to see that all those, you know, The Whale and Everything Everywhere All at Once just being praised. So that was good. I thought that was pretty interesting. So, yeah, it's good. It's good to see that happen. But that's pretty much it. That's all I wanted to mention. And then we will talk about, let's talk about Scream real quick. Is there something else you wanted to say? You said something?
Yeah, I did.
Okay.
But we can talk about Scream.
We're going to talk about Scream spoilers. So if you don't want to
hear... Not too spoily, though.
No, I do timestamps and I label things. So if you don't want to see or hit fucking skip, you know what I mean? That's the whole point of timestamps. Because like, I want to talk about it. I'm upset. I liked it. But so if you don't want to hear any spoilers, just skip to the next segment. But Scream 6, what do you think?
I think you're going to have to watch it again. You have this problem where you set expectations for yourself when you go into a film and then you end up not liking it. Then you go back and watch it later when those expectations have died off and you're like, no, this was better than I thought it was, but I had my expectations too high because you felt that way about all of Jordan Peele's movies.
Okay, that's different, first of all.
But am I wrong?
Well, it's different in the sense that those were brand new original ideas and they got hyped up for me. Well, at least Get Out got hyped up. And then I got myself hyped up for Us because it was more horror. At least I thought it was going to be more horror. But his movies have have way too many depths and layers going on. It's nothing going on in Scream. It's pretty straightforward slasher.
Pardon you.
Okay, I'm saying when it comes to like a message, like there's not really like a message with Scream. It's a slasher film.
Yeah.
So it's, you know.
I really liked Scream. I felt like it really was a great installment to the franchise. I feel like Scream overall as a horror franchise has one of the strongest sets of films that universally like everybody's into. I know how you said you really like all the Saw movies, but you know, a lot of those don't speak to people because of how graphic they are.
No.
Scream, however, appeals to a broader audience without really losing that horror aspect and tends to stick with people a lot longer.
Well, if you're talking ratings, too, it has some of the most consistent ratings of any franchise. The first one's a 4.1, 2, 4, and 5 are all 3.4s. And then this last one's a 3.9. The only one that to go under 3 is 3, and it's a 2.9. But like consistency with ratings, Scream definitely takes the cake.
Yeah,
for franchises.
Because it has like strong installments.
Yeah, they somehow managed to out-meta themselves every time. This is the only time where I was like, okay, that's that was about as meta as it usually gets.
Yeah, they didn't really out-meta themselves this time. They still had meta moments to this
that were
still great. And it felt like the characters really learned from that, like, trust the movies thing, trust the movie, logic. So there was a lot to like about this. It was very graphic.
Which was super fun.
A lot of face murder.
Same thing with 5. They had
just like right in the face, guys.
They had the knife through the neck in 5, and they had one through the cheek in 5. I was like, man, you
but
guys
this
are...
is a lot of straight up stabs to the face.
A lot of murder, yeah, in eyeballs too.
Yeah,
good
so,
God.
But I will say they did pull more punches on this one than we're typically used to seeing. Like, there was a chunk of characters that I think there was like 6 characters in there that you were like, oh, I don't want to see any of them get die. Well, don't worry, because none of them die. They all hang on by a thread. And it's not to say that I wanted them to actually follow through on it. But I also did because, I mean, damn, they killed Randy in 2.
Yeah, and they took Dewey. I think it's because they took Dewey in 5. They're like, we gotta reel it back on killing these legacy characters, because that was a huge blow. We all knew it was coming, but I was like, I didn't want it to actually happen.
Yeah, and I feel like they pulled some punches on that. And if you really think about the number of deaths that happened, it was fairly low for a Scream film, because a lot of deaths you thought would happen didn't really happen. A lot of people you thought died didn't die, and you're like, yeah. Okay, so apparently Ghostface ain't as good as killing people this time, which I mean obviously different people every time, but like killer motivation for killing while extremely reminiscent of 2 and yeah, hilarious.
I was gonna say
extremely confusing in the Pot Kettle Black situation, because it's like, I'm killing you because you're a killer. What?
Do what?
You've like, if we're gonna put a scale here on murder, you're winning that race, buddy.
Yeah.
So but hilariously reminiscent of 2 in a very amusing way. And it was also very nice to see Hayden Panettiere back in the film. So
I'm glad you said her name, because I can't say it. Pantene Pro V. I can't say her last name.
I've been a fan of hers Pantera? Since Heroes. Oh, okay. So
yeah, she was back in this playing a very interesting role that I was like, wow, FBI agent. Interesting. You've been busy since Scream 4.
Kirby is an amazing character. Okay. Yeah. And her whole thing with Mindy. Is that her name?
Mindy, I don't know.
Short black hair. I can't think of her name. Sorry.
what whole thing? What do you mean?
They're like whole back and forth movie nerds, like they're horror movie nerds. It's nice to see that Kirby kept that despite her trauma from the 4th film. But to bond with somebody over that was really delightful. And no hate to Randy, but kind of just proved that the horror geek girls in these franchises are way more fun.
Yeah. Yes, it was Mindy.
Yay.
Yeah. That was a fun little conversation when they were talking about like favorite movies and franchises, and they got they said some of the same things, and then they said wildly different things. I thought that was pretty funny.
Yeah, Heather said that she kind of wanted them to get together. I'm like, I'm fairly certain one of them, Kirby, is straight, so I don't think that'll happen, but I understand.
Did they go into her sexuality in 4? I don't know if they do.
Kirby had the crush on what's his
Kieran,
face?
Kieran Culkin?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then, so there was that. But
yeah, that's right.
But then, you know, Mindy is very clearly gay.
Yeah.
So.
Well, yeah, I mean, so, like, let me state my case here. I don't think it was bad in any way. I do, however, you know, I am holding it up to an expectation of something that I want and something that a lot of the fans want. Doesn't make any sense. We want Stu back. Just bring him back. You know, it doesn't make sense. And they even fucking poke fun at his death, or at least we assume it's his death in the first movie with the whole, they, you know, how they have the layer of ghost face shit, which that was my biggest problem. Where the fuck are you getting all that shit? I know Dermot Mill, fucker, Daddy Milroney was involved, and he was, you know, he was the cop, and I assume that he's the one that stole the evidence, but what, how the fuck are you stealing all that shit without somebody noticing?
For the love of his baby boy.
No, but not why. How are you stealing all that with no one knowing that all of it's gone, and then you rent this place in New York, and it's all this ghost face shit? It's just, it's a little... It just, that was my biggest issue, I think. It's like, this would never fucking happen. That was a very unlikely situation, at least, because Scream does really base a lot of its storytelling in reality, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I guess that was one of my big issues, but, you know, and I don't know, I guess they said it was going to be the goriest, you know, I don't like when people do that, when, like, they're like, oh, this is going to be the goriest, bloodiest Scream. It was definitely gory and bloody, but I was holding it to a different expectation. When someone's like, it's going to be, like, brutal, I'm thinking of my level of brutal. So it's like, I definitely need to watch it again, because I go in with these expectations because people hyping it up, and then I see it has a 3.9 out of 5 on Letterboxd, and I'm like, holy shit, like, this has got to be amazing. So I hold it to, like, what I'm assuming is going to be 5 stars, and then it's not 5 stars for me, and I'm like, okay, so... Definitely going to rewatch it, and I don't hate, I gave it a 3.5. Like, it was still a great movie, a good time. It was a great experience in Dolby with the 6 people we were with. I thought it was a fun time. But yeah, I'm going to have to buy that when it comes out, give it a rewatch, and see if my opinions change. Because as of right now, you know, it was...
Well, you know it's my favorite franchise, so I'm always a sucker for a Scream movie, so...
Yeah, now I want to watch 2 and 3, because we watched 4 and 5 and 6. Anyway, I know we watched 1 recently, so now we got to go back and watch 2 and 3. Oh no. So yes, that will end the Scream spoilers here. I don't want to keep talking about it too much, and we didn't even really give that much away. I didn't even tell you who the killers were. So what was the thing you wanted to say?
Oh, okay. So I saw this TikTok.
Oh boy.
Where this person talks about like the Saw movies and the traps, and uh-huh. So some of the traps are a little on the ridiculous side, or they don't really make sense.
Doesn't need to make sense.
Well, you know, you and I have discussed this, but she was talking about if there was any Saw movie she could get the most people out alive in, it was the third one. Because if that dude, she's like, all I would have to do is move faster than the guy in the film. And I was like, thinking about it, I'm like, yeah, that's, you know what? Come to think of it, when I watched that with you, that's all I could think about is, dude, so many people would be alive right now if you'd stop staring slack-jawed and not doing anything and move your ass.
They're all part of his son's murder, though. So it's like he has to battle his conscience. Like, do I save them or do I, like, let them pay for what they did?
And I get that.
If there wasn't that emotional connection, obviously, yeah, I'd be fucking hauling ass.
But at the same time, I don't need my own personal body count by watching all these people die. I'm not a shitty person.
Yeah.
Move faster. But I just thought that was hilarious because I was like, no, I 100% agree. She's like, everybody could have made it out of that film if he had just moved his ass.
Yeah. And even 4 is kind of the same setup because he goes around and has to, you know, save people or let people die. So
yeah,
even 3 and 4, yeah, you could definitely save a lot of people there.
That's, yeah, I forgot to send that to you.
Yeah,
I
think, what the fuck.
I think because it was like I was up at like 6:30 this morning and I thought maybe you didn't want me sending you.
My phone's on D&D all night.
Dungeons and Dragons.
Yeah. So anyways, random Saw moment there. Let's get on to some women's history facts here. Let me scroll down. So women's history is celebrated in March partly due to the weather. It's no accident that Women's History Month is celebrated in March, while the timing aligns in part with International Women's Day, which is March 8th. The choice was also due to a more practical set of considerations. According to former legislative aide Susan Scanlon, Representative Barbara Mikulski originally suggested the recognition take place in August in order to celebrate the anniversary of U.S. women's suffrage. I looked at her, remembered Scanlan, and said, Barbara, do you want me to be outside parading on August 26th when it's hotter than the hinges of hell? Agreed. Especially in Florida, August and September are the worst fucking months. Rather than roasting in late summer heat, Scanlan pushed for March, which would mean the celebrations would occur in a season that Scanlan appropriately dubs marching weather.
Nice.
Very nice. And number 2 here. The month is a time to reflect on women's overlooked contributions. What exactly is Women's History Month? Primarily, the month's goal is to both commemorate and encourage the study, observance, and celebration of a vital role of women in American history. While programs and celebrations are organized around the country, they're led at the federal level by the Library of Congress, National Archives, National Endowment for the Humanities, National Gallery of Art, National Park Service, Smithsonian Institute, and the United States Holocaust Memorial Museum.
Cool.
2 more fun facts about women's history. Let's go on to the IMDb summary. Have we seen this? Yes, we both have. We went to Downtown Disney, because I hate calling it Disney Springs, at the AMC there, where we dined in, and we had a burger debacle, which I think we talked about when we saw it.
Yeah, we had a whole thing with our burgers, so we missed a chunk of this film trying to get them to stop putting stuff on my burger and giving him the wrong burger.
Yeah, and then I think eventually we found out that I had your burger and you had mine. I don't know. They refunded me for whatever. So yeah, we missed a bunch of this
movie. That's how we learned to show up so the food shows up and the lights are still on.
So yes, we've seen this, but we wanted to rewatch it because we missed, you know, quite a lot of it. And we were both a little frustrated because we were just so goddamn hungry. So this is Bodies, Bodies, Bodies from 2022, released on August 5th of that year in the United States. Rated R for mild sex and nudity, moderate violence and gore, severe profanity, moderate alcohol, drugs, and smoking. That was definitely severe. They were railing lines of cocaine.
But only sometimes.
And moderate, frightening, and intense scenes, coming in at an hour and 34 minutes, listed as a comedy horror thriller, directed by Helena Reijn. Reijn? R-E-I-J-N?
Rain?
Rain? Let freedom rain? Who has only directed one other movie called Instinct from 2019, written by Sarah Delap, who has only written this movie. Also written by Christine Raupinian as This has her credit listed as based on a story by. So did she write the story or something?
Could be a short story.
Okay. That always confuses me when they're like, say things like
that. A story
like
by usually means they wrote a short story or something that this is then based off of.
Okay, I guess that makes sense. Yeah, maybe it was like a short film at one point that they expanded upon. Produced by 10 people. I forgot to look who stood out to me, so that'll be a mystery.
But all 10 of them are there.
All 10 of them are there. Composed by Disasterpiece, who has also done the soundtrack for It Follows, Under the Silver Lake, and Marcel the Shell with Shoes On.
We have the It Follows LP.
Yeah, you can really hear the score coming through. Like, it sounded very It Follows. Mm. It had the same high-pitched little chimes and stuff. And I was like, yeah, I recognize that. Cinematography by Jasper Wolf, who also did Instinct from 2019, which is Helena's only other movie. Edited by Julia Block, who has also edited Green Room and His House. And Taylor Levy, who has edited Prisoners of a Ghostland. So I think everybody besides Jasper and Disasterpiece at this point are all ladies, which is amazing.
Yeah.
I find that fucking awesome. And then even the cast, too. Starring Amanda, actually her name literally is Amandla.
Oh.
That is her name. That was not a mistake. I've double checked. Steinberg is Sophie, who was also in The Hunger Games as Rue.
Different role for her here, yeah.
And she's
different
only
vibes.
Yeah. We've got Maria Bakalova as B, who was in Borat's subsequent movie film as Tutar Sagdiev. Rachel Sennett as Alice, who was in nothing that I recognize. Then we have Chase Sue Wonders as Emma, who was also in On the Rocks as Chase. And the delightful Pete Davidson as David. They really didn't struggle naming him. Most notably from SNL, but he was also in The Suicide Squad as Blackguard.
Or the boyfriend of all your favorite celebrities.
Yeah, it's America's boyfriend. You will at some point date him in your lifetime.
It's like jury duty.
It's just a fact. It comes around for everybody. Estimated budget of couldn't find anything, but a worldwide box office gross of $13.9 million. This movie was filmed in Chappaqua, New York, if I'm saying that right. I don't know. Sure.
Yeah.
You can watch this on Amazon Prime for a $5.99 rental, a $19.99 purchase, or just buy the Blu-ray like I did for $8. Movies that came out around the same time, we have Bullet Train, Where the Crawdads Sing, Nope, Resurrection, Prey, Beast, and The Invitation, which we have still yet to see.
I've seen most of those, though.
I've seen everything except for Where the Crawdads Sing and The Invitation.
Yeah, I don't really want to see Where the Crawdads Sing.
Why?
It's like a romantic kind of movie, I think.
And since when do you not like romance movies?
Not if they're that outright romance kind, you know.
Oh.
And The Invitation, I'm pretty sure, is streaming somewhere now, so we should watch that.
Yeah, because I don't want to buy it, because I heard it's not that great.
So. I heard it would have been better had they not cut out some of the scenes.
If they would have just made it R like it should have been.
Yeah.
I don't even think they gave it an unrated version on Blu-ray, which is bullshit. If you're going to make it R to PG-13, give us the unrated cut, like Megan. Everybody take a page out of their book. Specific horror moment, go!
Jeez.
so many.
Specific horror moments? I don't think I have a specific one in mind.
Mine was David's death, just because it was unexpected.
Oh, see, that's my favorite kill.
Okay.
The reveal of who exactly killed him. that was my favorite.
Fucking great. So that's your favorite kill. Oh shit, I did, what the fuck? Oh, my favorite kill is the over the rafters kill.
Mm.
Where they yeet that person into oblivion. But I don't want to say who it is because we're not gonna go that far into the movie. Favorite character?
No.
Really?
I guess Lee Pace's character, but like not anyone was particularly really likable.
See, now I only like her because she's the comedic relief, because this is not me liking her for who she is, because everyone is a piece of shit in this movie. But it's Alice, because every line out of her mouth is just like fucking, oh, woe is me. First world problems.
Yeah.
White people problems. It was hilarious. So she was my favorite in the sense of just because she was funny. Least favorite character would probably be, I had it as Jordan, but she has reasons to be like that.
Yeah, but I didn't like her because she was immediately standoffish and like she'd just get nasty with B out of nowhere. And you're like, which I mean, I guess later you kind of realize it's
why,
like a
but
like an ex sort of thing with Sophie. Yeah. But still, it was like, damn, you don't even know her.
Yeah.
Like, why are you attacking her for Sophie's decisions?
For no reason. Yeah. So she was pretty unlikable. I mean, they were pretty much all unlikable, except for Lee Pace was the only one that was like, hey.
Alice was the only one that was forgivable because she was funny.
Yeah,
because
she was funny and brutally honest. Favorite line, I've got a couple here. Pete Davidson's like, well, I just look like I fuck. Like, it looks like I, like, it looks like I fuck. He's hilarious. And then Alice's line about, what was his name? Greg's, she was like, it's his light therapy mask. He has seasonal depression. I'm like, I don't even know what that means. And then her whole
You don't know what that means?
No, I mean, like, what does a light therapy mask have to do with seasonal depression? Like,
oh,
what is...
because if you, which is weird for where they're at in the time of year, but usually it's in cold places because there's less sun exposure. So those kind of masks can help give you vitamin D. That's like a real thing.
No, I know, but, I know seasonal, I understand seasonal.
Doesn't really make sense for where they were at or the weather.
Like, we don't have seasonal depression here, really, because it's always like sunny. It's always sunny and bright. If anything, I have depression because it's so hot. Oh, my God. And then the whole podcast speech from Alice is hilarious for obvious reasons.
I like when she was explaining that Greg was not dangerous because he was a Libra moon.
He's a Libra moon. She just kept saying that. She's like, do you know his last name? She's like, he's a Libra moon. Like, that's not answering my question at all.
And the justification or like the whole why Jordan is trying to say like he must be the killer. Because he's a vet, and you just keep saying he's a vet. She's like, yeah, a veterinarian.
A veterinarian. Oh, that was hilarious.
Yeah, because they thought she meant like a war vet. Like, geez.
Like, where did he serve? Afghanistan, Iraq? It's like, nowhere. He was a veterinarian. Yeah. Oh, my God.
It's good stuff.
Good stuff. So, IMDb summary here. When a group of rich 20-somethings plan a hurricane party at a remote family mansion, a party game turns deadly in this fresh and funny look at backstabbing, fake friends, and one party gone very, very wrong.
Accurate.
Accurate as fuck. So, we're going to go into the story, and then you wanted to talk more about the...
Dynamics
and how ironic it is, so...
Yeah, because, you know, the story itself is fairly simple. It's a whodunit, but you know what's more interesting is how exactly they got into a whodunit situation, because usually that happens with a bunch of people you don't know, not your entire friend group.
Yeah, your entire shitty friend group.
So the film opens up on Sophie and B aggressively pawing at each other and making out on the way to David's house to weather out a hurricane that is coming with Sophie's friends, because B is an outsider. When they do show up to David's house, everyone is surprised to see that that she's arrived, because she did not actually tell anybody she was coming. She never responded to their group text message, but she plays it off.
She says she did, though.
Yeah.
I responded.
And she tries to play it off. Jordan is immediately annoyed, visibly annoyed that she's there. But everyone else kind of introduces themselves, but are immediately a little on the standoffish side. Like, it's hard to describe. It's like this thing with girls where you meet someone new and you can tell the girls are being nice to you, but you can tell they're already like uninterested in giving a shit about you 10 seconds into meeting.
Which is hilarious, because guys can literally be friends based on like, oh, look at this. We're wearing similar colors. Best friends. Or, oh, you like this beer? That's my favorite beer. Oh, we'll be best friends forever. And girls are always just like, not impressed.
Which is so fun. Which, but there are instances where girls will immediately click with each other. I've done that before. And then.
Oh, I know.
And girls, you know what the hell I'm talking about. You will meet a girl, or like, it's usually if you meet a group of girls and you're the outsider, and you can immediately feel this wall of judgment between you and them, where they're immediately like trying to read you, scan you, figure out who you are and whether or not or what your problem is, because you must have a problem to exist in their space.
Well, you got to figure out if you're a threat or are you an ally. What's going on?
And this becomes immediately apparent with Jordan, who is very standoffish about B's existence. But, you know, they all... and then I should say that Alice also has her boyfriend there, who is Lee Pace, who is much older than everybody else.
He's at least a good 10, 15 years older.
Yes. He is a full-grown adult, whereas these people are in their 20s.
Yeah. These people are essentially children.
Yeah. And so they're all kind of talking, chit-chatting. David is very weird around Greg. He clearly does not like him.
Some weird alpha male shit going on there.
Yeah, he's like standoffish about him.
Yeah.
And David is dating Emma. And that's about all the relationship related stuff going on there. What are you doing? I'm talking. I hope that was good.
Mikey's like, what are you doing? I'm sending him a picture of a pot. That's a horrible picture.
Yeah, try that again. Could you do that again?
It's too late. I already sent it.
What the hell?
Enjoy that one, Mikey.
That hurt. Anyway, so the rain starts coming in. Everybody goes in. Sophie and B go to settle in and guests start pawing at each other some more.
Aggressively, just like hand to crotch. You're like, whoa, calm down.
Yeah. And then David just lets himself into the room and where he asks to have a private conversation with Sophie. They have a little chat about Sophie and a conversation that apparently she had asked him to have with her parents, though we don't know why till later what that conversation was about, and a discussion about her being in rehab for drugs and her being sober.
Yep.
From drugs, though. I don't think they say anything about her with alcohol.
Well, no, remember they offer her some champagne at the beginning and she says, I'm sober.
Mm.
Yeah. So she's supposed to be sober off of everything, which does not go very far.
Yeah. And so this really has a lot of them playing games, trying to pop bottles of champagne with sabers. Lee Pace's character does that, which
first try
David off even more because he's doing some cool trick thing.
With the fucking, like, with a
an actual saber.
Yeah, with the saber he just pulled off the wall. And Pete Davidson's like, dude, don't pull shit off my dad's wall, man.
Yeah, so, you know, they're trying to have fun and hang out and get to know B a little, do some drugs and party a little. And, you know, at first it kind of starts as, like, a regular everyone's hanging out, but, like, there's still this weird dynamic of, like, these friends where they kind of just seem to know each other really well. But B is awkwardly kind of trying to interact with them. And then it kind of goes into when it gets into the evening and then they start trying to play games with each other, which they start with this slapping game where apparently you take turns slapping each other as hard as you can, which is a game I never want to play.
Well, you could tell right off the bat, like, these are the games y'all play. It's no wonder your friend group is falling apart.
Yeah. And then there's dancing and Sophie sees B and Jordan dancing way too close, which is weird considering how standoffish and weird Jordan was to B, even though there was this moment where she, like, warns her about Sophie, but, like, 6 inches from her face, and, like, why do you have to breathe into my mouth to tell me this information?
Drugs.
And it feels like a really weird sexually charged moment on Jordan's end.
Mm-hmm.
But so Sophie sees the two of them dancing, which is clearly on B's end just more dancing. But on Jordan's end, it's again looks weirdly sexually charged.
Mm-hmm.
And so she suggests playing bodies, bodies, bodies. And they at first say no because everyone gets too intense for this game. And
boy, if that wasn't the most true statement I've ever heard.
They do decide to play. It is a game. There's actually, the way they play is very brief. There's a longer version of this game.
Yeah.
Which is the right version. This is a very short version for the sake of the movie. Where someone gets the card that has an X on it. And if they get that card, they're the killer. So when all the lights turn out, everyone scatters. And the killer has to try to touch someone on the back to kill them. And if someone finds that body, they say bodies, 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 and all the lights go on. They try to figure out who the killer is. Normally in the game, you try to, the killer tries to kill more people than just one.
Well, yeah, but someone came across the body, so they had to turn the lights on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm saying in the, how it's traditionally played.
Yeah. You want to get as many people as you can. Ideally everybody.
Yeah.
Yeah. Then you win, I assume.
Yes. so they play, everyone's kind of wandering around. Greg, Lee Pace's character, is the one that gets found dead when they call bodies, bodies, bodies. It turns into a whole thing where everyone ends up getting into a fight. And Alice delightfully starts sharing personal information between David and Emma and how they're not having sex to everybody. And you kind of get this, this is where it really starts because, like, the slapping scenes are a little weird. But when she starts dropping personal information and, like, dumping their personal business, that's when you really start to see this dynamic of they're not really good friends because they're airing out this stuff in front of everybody like it's no big deal. And obviously, David is hurt by this information that Emma shared with Alice. He dips out. And then everyone else kind of scatters around and whatnot. Greg goes to bed and...
Wait, because they have that moment with Greg and David where...
Oh, yeah.
David's like fucking with him, or at least he says he is. He's like, I'm just trying to have a fun time. And David's like, oh, I get it. I understand. And then they lock eyes intensely. And he's like, I think I should go to bed. So he saunters.
Greg's the one that goes to bed.
So yeah, Greg saunters off to bed while David's... David is very angry in this movie. He's very upset about a lot of things.
Yeah. And so from there, they're kind of wandering around. And while B's wandering around after a while, and, you know, everyone's kind of having these little side conversations and whatnot, B hears a banging sound on a glass on the window. And that's where she finds David with his throat slit open on the back porch. Everyone runs out to see him, except for Greg, obviously, who's gone to sleep.
or at least we assume has gone to sleep.
Bum, 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 bum. Bum. And from there, they're like, okay, well, someone killed him. And now they've got to figure out who the killer is. The suspicion immediately goes to Greg.
Where is Greg?
And where is Greg?
Where is
because
he?
Everyone's yelling. Everyone's going to Greg. And it's so funny to me because we were talking about this. This is a whole whodunit. Everybody's suspicious of everybody. Of course, they immediately go to the guy that was having a fairly, honestly, if they were looking at it clearly and they probably weren't on so many drugs, they would see David was strictly the agitator and Greg was just trying to chill out with everybody.
Yeah.
But because they don't, you know, because they're all tense about it, they immediately suspect him. They go to look through his stuff. They go... Emma, when she finds the buddy, she runs off and hides in her room. They are looking all over to see if they can find Greg because he's not in his room, which in this room, Sophie notices there's cocaine lines just out and ready to go.
Yep.
And so they go through his stuff. They see he has one of those survival packs where it has like a knife, rope, first aid kit, flashlight, map, all that stuff, which seriously, though, in a hurricane, it makes sense to have something like that.
Well, they're also in the woods, too. So.
Yeah, they're in a very nice house that's kind of away from everybody else's. So it makes sense to have that kind of stuff, though, for an emergency situation. But because someone's dead now, they're just like, this is a murder bag. Like,
suspicious.
A murder bag with a large first aid kit?
Yeah, and the map, there's a map, too, with the house circled on it, so that was suspicious. But it's probably just so he knew where he was in case, you know, hey, where are you? I'm at this location, you know what I mean? It's probably
he just wanted to know where he was.
Yeah, if you're in a remote area of the forest, I would want coordinates as well.
Yeah, and so at that point, they've lost power, by the way, I should say, that they did lose power in the midst of all this.
Yeah.
So they all weapon up, go and find Greg. Greg is laying on the floor in the middle of the basketball in-house gym situation they've got there.
With his light mask on.
He's got a light mask on. He's just laying on the floor with some sort of Bluetooth headset on. And then they immediately start attacking him. He's very confused and thinks they're still playing the game, which he then tries to hop right into.
It's like, you're fucking with me. I get it.
Yeah. 'Cause he has no idea what's going on. And you've got a bunch of girls who have been doing drugs and are tensed up. He thinks they're kidding about David being dead. They're not kidding. They think he's being erratic because he's trying to play along with them, which leads to a whole standoff with knives. He sets his knife down with all the other girls, except then Jordan tries to jump on his back for some reason.
That would be like you trying to tackle me. It's not going to go well.
No.
I'm a giant.
So, yeah, Lee Pace is a fairly tall guy.
I'd say he's around my height.
Yeah, and so they're trying to basically wrangle him. He is, pushing back. He's still very confused as to what the hell's happening. But while he's in the middle of this, he's 6'5". So, yeah, he's
literally my height, just built like a fucking big truck. Guy. I'll trade up, man, what I would kill for those pecs, man.
I mean, if you did whatever insane workout routine he does.
I just need, it's like, what did Rob McElhenney say from Sunny in Philadelphia? He's like, it's easy. You just need a personal trainer and have no free time and have someone to plan everything for you. I'm like, oh, yeah, you know, just let me
easy
get that.
Easy and free.
Let me get all that money.
So in the midst of fighting with him, he's got a knife back and B wings him over the head with one of those the kettlebell weights.
Oh, is that what that was?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. That's why he. Okay.
Yeah, hits him a couple times. It was not. Oh, shit. It was one of those weights.
Yeah, no, that explains why he deceased it.
Yeah, and kills him. So they decide that must have been him then. And then they're panicking, except that's when Alice clarifies that he's not any kind of military anything. He's a veterinarian.
Oh, my God.
So at this point, everyone's still running around. Bee has gone off to find a shirt because she's thrown up on the one she wore. And then everyone's sitting together to try to talk about what they're going to do because they have no Wi-Fi, no power. And Sophie's car battery is dead and they don't have another car. So
nailed it, guys.
They're stranded. And at this point, Sophie sneaks off, does a line, pours herself a drink. And then what I think is interesting is when they find Emma and get her, and then Emma comes with them. She gets Xanax and Alice offers her Xanax, turns around, looks at Sophie and says, do you want one too? And you're like, what kind of fucking friend? Not only are you all doing drugs and right in front of her fucking face.
Yeah.
But then you start like offering her drugs.
That's not really how it works when you're supposed to be sober.
Yeah.
And you have a problem. She's had 3 problems with being in an ambulance about it. So you
She's had to go to the hospital 3 separate occasions. Yeah.
You think you'd not offer your friends drugs, but they're a toxic group of friends who only care about their image, I guess. I don't even know.
It's weird.
I don't even know what they care about at the end of the day.
They care about their own superiority and how they think they're better than each other.
There you go. Yeah. Yeah. Their image. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, but their own self-image. It's not how we all look together. It's I'm superior to you.
Yeah.
And
let me air out all the grievances I have with you in front of everyone.
Yeah. Sophie gets into a fight with Emma, basically saying that she never loved David anyway and that she was with him for 3 years for no reason.
Three years too long.
Yeah. 3 years. Yeah. Too long. They kind of start airing out their shit with each other and they get upset. And eventually Sophie goes and finds one of David's stashes of pills that she knows the location of because she and him are like BFF. So she would know where his drugs are and gives them to Emma, who then tries to make a pass at her for some reason.
That was so weird.
Yeah.
What was your move there, lady?
And then when they're wandering around trying to find Emma. They find Emma's body at the bottom of the stairs with her head cracked open. And Alice says that someone had to have pushed her. So again, there must be a killer.
Yeah, obviously, because there's still 4 people left. You got Jordan. You've got Alice. Sorry. Yeah, Jordan, Alice, Sophie, and Bee.
Yeah. And on top of this, by the way, I should say that they mentioned that there was a guy named Max who was there the day before who, when everyone else did mushrooms before Sophie and Bee got there, had gotten into a fight with David because he said that he loved Emma, David's girlfriend, too, and he dipped out. So they're convinced that maybe Max is sneaking around somewhere, too.
This unseen killer, which would make the most sense.
Yeah, so at this point, you've got 4 girls together. They're all panicking, and they're all getting threatened by each other, worried about who the killer is, trying to speculate who it is, all accusing each other.
All coked up as well.
All doing drugs.
And alcohol.
And that's what's interesting about this film is like, if I were at a cabin with my group of friends and one of my friends mysteriously died, I would not be like, which one of you did it? I would be like, who the hell else is here?
Yeah.
Because I actually have trust with my friends. These people do not trust each other. Their friendship seems to be completely reliant on the length of time they've known each other. And they have no real connection other than that because every time tensions rise, people start dropping dirt on each other about how this person said this about you and this person actually feels this about you. They start dropping all these terrible truths about what they really think of each other. And then you've got people like Bee and Greg who are just like kind of existing in this space with them going, what the hell?
Yeah, what did I just get dumped into? You've got, you know, people calling, you know, what was it? Sophie calling Emma a coward and no one really saying that she wasn't a coward. And then you've got people cheating on each other and you've got so much.
People saying like shitty things behind each other's back. The whole reason the tensions rise so high is because they know that they talk shit about each other. So they know there is no real actual area of trust. Where it's like, I know I speak so honestly to you and you speak so honestly to me. that I know who you really are. They really just know the down and dirty stuff about each other and have no real connection beyond that.
Yeah, I don't. It's like a shit posting group on Facebook where you go to just post shit about something. It's like a shit posting, like a group of friends that they have all just talking shit about each other.
And I know these friendships exist. I know that these like terrible toxic friend circles exist. But it's like, damn, problems that could have been solved if you had good friends.
And speaking of having good friends, no one even tries to remotely save David. No one tries to put a hand on his neck or get him a tourniquet.
That's what I said. They're like basically like put his head in their lap, like, and nobody puts any pressure on the wound.
What do now? I don't, like, what happens? Yeah, like, guys, no one tried to save anybody's life at all.
Yeah, like, no one tried to put anything on the wound. Nope. Like, damn, he might have actually survived a little longer had you all not just continued to let him bleed out.
Yeah, it's kind of wild how quickly everything goes downhill. And then once you find out who actually kills David, it just makes the whole movie hilarious, honestly.
Well, the whole thing's ridiculous. It's funny in the sense that it's like, wow, you guys are friends?
Yeah.
And then from there, it just kind of spirals out of control because they really don't have anything to stand on. And each one of them keeps acting like from this place of like moral superiority, but they don't. And it's really fucked up that Sophie, who's also a crappy person, by the way, I don't want to get that confused because she was sober. That made her a better person. She still has other problems. So like, good for her for being sober. The rest of her personality is still ass. But she also acts like she's in a better place because she's in a better place sobriety wise, that she's on a higher moral ground. She also has some like shit, and it's just, oh my God. Like, they're exhausting.
Oh, yeah. It's an insufferable group of assholes that it's really fun to watch because I'm like, man, I don't have to worry about this in my life because I would be horrified to be in a situation like this.
I couldn't stand a friend group like
that. I couldn't stand that shit at all. So it's just funny to watch that and be like, oh, man, that's hilarious that those people probably exist in the world. And yeah, I don't want to be anywhere near that.
Yeah, like, I know realistically people talk about their friends to their other friends sometimes here and there.
Yeah.
But your entire friendship should not be all you do is talk about your other friends to each other.
Shouldn't be based on cutting everybody down. No pun intended.
Yeah. So there's that.
Yeah. It's funny. I don't know. It's very enjoyable. And like I said, once you get the reveal of what is actually happening, it kind of makes the whole thing hilarious. And also, but it's also like you don't feel sorry for anybody except for Greg and B, because, you know, they were the only really true innocent people there, but everyone really does get what they deserve, and then some people have to live with what they've done. So everyone gets exactly what they deserve in this movie, if I'm being quite honest.
Yeah, Greg's if anyone had, like, that's what I'm talking about, though. Like, if anyone had a clear head and sense enough to talk, Greg probably wouldn't have had to get bludgeoned over the head if someone had actually said, hey, hold on, let's all calm down and stop threatening him with weapons.
It was like the Spider-Man meme where you've got three Spider-Men pointing at each other. It was just that this entire movie.
Except it was five girls just pointing knives at him out of nowhere. He has no idea what's going on.
Yeah. So, hilarious movie. Definitely check it out. We'll end it there.
Yeah.
Let's get into real quick. Let's get into some trivia here about the movie. For the sabering the champagne bottle. Oh, sorry. Tagline. Excuse me. This is not a safe space. Who wants to play and they're dying to play? Don't like any of those. For the sabering the champagne bottle, Lee Pace admitted that he practiced for the feat at home using Thranduil's sword from his time in The Hobbit 2012.
That is really on brand.
That is probably why he nailed it. As the film takes place almost exclusively in a dark mansion with the only source of light being cell phones, a headlamp, and glow tubes. Glow sticks? What, the glow tubes? The cast had to be instructed on how to light the scene and themselves from cinematographer Jasper Wolf. Wolf proclaimed that if any of the cast missed their timing, the scene was unusable as all you would see is dark silhouette. With the latter's consent, Pete Davidson actually punched Lee Pace during the tequila slap scene. Yeah, I thought that was great. Goofs, the girls, so this is incorrectly regarded as a goof. The girl's car can't start because the battery is dead, yet they then honk the horn repeatedly. The horn is electric and cannot be used with the dead battery. But the starter is heard attempting to start. The battery has minimal power, enough for the horn, but not enough to start the car.
Mm.
Yes.
I was wondering about that.
Yes, rated 6.3 out of 10 on IMDb, 3.5 out of 5 on Letterboxd, 86% on the tomato meter, 69 giggity percent audience score. I gave it a 3.5.
I think I did the same.
3.5. Boom. So right on brand with the Letterboxd rating. Similar movies according to Letterboxd: Happy Death Day, Scream 4, Scream 2022, Werewolves Within, and Happy Death Day to You. Similar movies according to IMDb: Pearl, Barbarian, X, Nope, and Men.
Those don't feel like similar films at all.
I know, it's very weird. So let's do some bad reviews and then we'll get the fuck out of here. I will kick it over to you. I've got...
They have to be bad reviews? I thought they were supposed to be funny.
Or bad or funny. Well, usually,
I had funny.
I was going to say, usually the funny reviews are bad, so...
You said you want me to start?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, my first one, I got 3.
Okay.
Okay, so first one, 3 stars. Strongest character was the iPhone battery that lasted an entire night with the flashlight on.
And the fucking screen brightness at maximum.
Right.
Like we're going to we go back and forth.
Oh,
here.
Okay, go ahead.
Half star on Letterboxd from Earl 12456. Bodies, Bodies, Bodies is the worst A24 film I've ever seen. All the characters are unlikable. Buddy, I think you missed the point there.
Yeah.
You're not supposed to like anybody.
They wouldn't have had any of this happen if they trusted each other.
Was that the review?
No, I'm saying that's...
Oh, I was like, that's a very accurate review.
No. Oh, is it my turn to review the review?
Yes.
Okay. 4 stars. Agatha Christie's Euphoria. If you don't know, Agatha Christie did Murder on the Orient Express and Death on the Nile.
Yeah, so. I saw 2 other reviews that said something about Agatha Christie. I didn't get it, so I didn't.
So that was that, you know, mixed with Euphoria, which is also a film about a bunch of drag adult people who are friends but are shitty people.
2 stars on Letterboxd from Warsami. A24 just ain't what it used to be. False.
Wow.
Falsitudes.
5 stars.
Oh, shit.
A cautionary tale about falling asleep first at a slumber party. Which I guess would be more reference to Lee Pace's character.
2 stars from Mike Finnerty. TikTok was a mistake. You'll understand why that's funny later. Anything else you got?
No, that's all I had.
I got 2 more. 2 stars from Dustin. This is why I would never go to a party at Pete Davidson's.
That's fair.
And last but not least, 1 star from Kate Rawlings. Stupid people doing stupid shit should have taken away from the fact that it's just fucking stupid. Someone get the noose. Yikes.
Yikes.
Major yikes, Kate Rawlings. Anyways, let's get out of here. You can find us on Facebook at Frightmares and Instagram and Slasher app at Frightmares Podcast. Twitter at Frightmares_pod. I'm on TikTok at silver.shamrock. You can drop me a line at stayspooky@outlook.com. I'm also on Letterboxd as Dr. Proctor. You are.
Watson LMP 90.
Yeah. Catch us next week. Me and Mikey are going to be doing a film, a foreign film from last year. That I think I said this already, is a Shudder exclusive or something. I don't know. But anyways, until then, stay tuned and
stay spooky.